Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Eddie Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. We were joined by Geraint Thomas, the Tour de France winning cyclist. He's got a new book out. He talked a bit of football and his teammates as well. So hopefully you'll enjoy that. We had a bit of a chat with Geoffrey Boycott, who's selling off a lot of his memorabilia. He explained why, didn't he?
He did. And talking of legends, we spoke to our own Johnny Owen, does a show here, of course, on Sunday morning, filmmaker. He's just produced a film, directed a film about Shankly, Jock Stein and Matt Busby, which sounds really interesting.
Sounds very, very interesting, called The Three Kings. That, and you hear a bit from us, and a little bit of a chat we had with the late, great Bobby Ball around 11 years ago. We brought that out of the archive because he sadly died earlier today. But here it all is.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Good afternoon, Paul. And I was quite fascinated by the news that Burnley could be sold to an Egyptian businessman.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's no truth in the rumour he's going to replace Sean Dyche with Graham Alexandria.
Oh, that's good. You're not doing your Nigel Sphinx material, are you?
Although
we don't want any more of those.
Although he is really worried about slipping down the pyramid. It's a two-parter,
It's
sorry.
A two-parter, yeah. That's very good, Andy.
Thank you. Yes, to the games last night. And good win for Chelsea for about an hour, though. It was pretty sticky. First off, I've got a note here that says, we've played backwards so much, I can't tell which way we're playing. I mean, that's the problem.
Really?
Oh, for goodness sake.
Andy, you won 4-0. Are you going to give them some clog?
No, because in the end, they played. Ziyech played very well.
He's a good player.
He does look good, actually. But so that was good.
Havertz, you still can't quite get your head around it, can you?
He has these little moments where you think, "Oh, this bloke's good," and then there are other moments where you're just annoyed with him because he gives the ball away.
You like it? You like his ability? There's been players like this over the years that every ball, every pass is a hospital pass. Mm. Every pass is a potential career threatener for the player that is going to.
Oh yeah, he does.
Well, he
like
just
a
leaves him
ball.
A little bit short. Does he? Yeah. Is not enough pace. Just a touch short. Just enough for a defender to come in through the back here. It's never great, that, is it?
We'll see. He's young and he's obviously got something about it. Toby keeps telling me he's brilliant, so we'll see.
We saw the owner there last night because the game's in Russia. Yeah. We all know the issues he's got. But I was rereading the comments from Frank Lampard. He said, I was aware he was at the game, which always makes me happy. I could feel the support of the owner at the club, whether he's at games or not. I didn't manage to see him. Before the game, I was in the dressing room. By the time I came out for the warm-up, he wasn't around. So it sounds like he didn't see him last night.
No, he'd have seen him after the game.
Well, why wouldn't he have said, I had a chat with him after the game?
Well, because he does the interview.
Oh, I see.
And then after the interview.
Well, did he?
It
would seem a bit odd that Roman would leave to beat the traffic.
Well,
cheerio, Ivan. Cheers. See you in a couple of weeks. Cheers, Roman. It's always George, isn't it? Yeah. Cheers, George. See you in a couple of weeks. It's about 10 minutes before, led by the arm by his son, down the many steps of the stadium to beat the traffic.
They were telling us on commentary that Chelsea's pink shirts, the official description of the colour is Ember Glow.
Yeah.
The CNN weather girl, I thought you're starting.
Why don't you just call it Crystal Palace's kit? Wouldn't that make more sense?
It's true, actually. And it is fascinating with Manchester United how, I say this yesterday, they always look so much better when they're 1-0 up. They're brilliant on the break. They're so efficient.
Because teams have got to come onto them to equalise.
must be amongst the most efficient teams on the break in Europe. They really are, you know. But you'd imagine that, for example, when they play Arsenal on the weekend, that Arsenal will sit back in a low block, and then it's so much harder. But we'll discuss that with Simon Delaney.
He's going to join us shortly. We often speak to Simon when it's all going horribly wrong for Manchester United, the actor and TV presenter. But we're going to get him on with some good news for a change. And we're going to talk a bit about Dundalk as well. They take on Arsenal tonight. It's a huge night for them.
Chairman sounds a bit eccentric.
Yeah, we'll find out a bit more about the club.
Do you see this one, though? Radio host Luke Deal fled his breakfast show when he told his house was on fire.
Yeah.
What do you want to do, carry on broadcasting when his house burns down? It's not really a story, is it?
I suppose, in fact, if Toby came in and said your house was on fire during the bulletin, bit of breaking news, it's quite difficult.
I think I might leave.
I mean, what could he do? I mean, unless he's a part-time firefighter, it's the sort of thing you leave in. I mean, all you could effectively do, you know, you could effectively go there and stand there and watch your house burn down, which hopefully wouldn't happen.
No.
Or just to see how the firemen are getting on. But you don't want to be first on the scene. I don't know how close the boat lived to the studio. Bucket to water.
I've no idea.
Yeah.
There you go. Still, hopefully it was all right.
Yeah, fingers crossed, yeah. Anything else you want to talk about?
Well,
yes. No.
No, yes.
That bodes well for the next 2 and 3 quarters.
No, I wasn't expecting to. I like to...
You like to pace yourself. You're looking forward to the Papa John's? A new trophy, the Papa John's?
What is the Papa John's?
It's what was the EFL trophy, or more recently...
Vanarama, was it?
No, yeah. And then, of course, the leasing.com. Who could forget the magic knights of the leasing.com? You've got to feel for leasing.com, because it kind of came and went, didn't it, their sponsorship, with respect.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't leave an indelible mark on me.
Not really,
the way that Papa John's will.
Yeah, that's very true, actually. Yeah.
And we saw some of the players from the EFL delivering pizzas to local schools and people that need it, but
it reminds us. Hopefully, Papa John Motson will be back.
Oh yeah, Papa John Motson will be back tomorrow. We'll be chatting to Motty. He was very pleased to say
looking forward to it,
and he's going to be here for the Falls panel because he's got to get on top of it, hasn't he? Really, after
he's not going to be happy.
Some of these commentators
he'll do
have not
than
been
the
doing
people
too
have been
well.
Standing in for him, definitely.
Can you tell Andy it's 2 days in a row that he's not said hi to us? People get very funny about that.
Sorry, I do apologise.
Let's do it again. Anyway, here it is. It's 12 minutes past one. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Good afternoon, Paul. Good afternoon, everybody, valued and esteemed listeners.
There we are, Sam. I hope you've put that right. Because, you know, people,
I appreciate it. I'm not going to defend that. It was wrong of me.
Well, fair enough. It's not all about you.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
We're going to talk cycling now. Geraint Thomas has written mountains according to G. I'd call it some of his favourite mountains because he's got some fairly choice names for some of the worst of them. But anyway, he's here to tell us more. Geraint, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Well, good. Yeah, more to the point.
How are you?
How are you doing after when we all saw on TV what happened to you? How are you faring?
Yeah, I'm a lot better now, thanks. The initial week, 10 days, I kind of... I knew it was going to be the end of season, off season, so I kind of wasn't really resting as much as what the physios were telling me, and that kind of prolonged the uncomfort, really. So, I've got 1-month-year-old son, so I was chasing him around, and then I started to listen to him a bit more, rested up a bit, and using my crutch, and feel a lot better now. So, it's all good.
It was a completely freakish accident, sort of going over the drinks bottle. I mean, are they looking at what can be done to stop that happening to anybody else?
I think it happens a fair bit when you're going quite fast and you hit a few bumps. You know, the bottle cages, they can come out quite easily sometimes. I think the new bottles we have these days as well, they're a screw top, whereas before they used to be kind of just push them on. So when you run over it, it used to just blow open. And you might get drenched with somebody else's sports drink, you know, but it's better than throwing you off your bike. But there's obviously little things they could do. Like, it was in the neutral zone as well. It wasn't actually even part of the race, which is kind of even more annoying, but it's just the way it goes, you know. I think, you know, nothing ever really goes to plan, does it? And it's just unfortunate because the whole year was sort of building up to that point. It felt like I was just starting to go really well and find some really good form and was looking forward to a good race. And for it to end on the third day was frustrating, but you know, that's the way it goes.
Sure.
Now, we'll come back to cycling generally, but on the book, you make a very good point at the start of the book that, you know, if you love football, you can't go and have a kick about at Wembley, unless you break in, which obviously we don't advise. You can't play tennis centre court at Wimbledon for the same reason, or you can't play rugby at the Principality, but all the mountains that you discuss here are accessible, aren't they, to Joe Public, and if they fancy taking it on, they can have a go.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's, you know, probably the best bit about cycling as a sport, really. You know, it's so accessible. You know, even the races on out on the road, you know, you don't have to pay or anything. You can just rock up and watch the race. You can go to any of the mountains or descents or, you know, well, yeah, all over the world and just rock up and watch. And it's the same thing with riding it as well. And I think, you know, especially, you know, there's climbs in like Belgium, which are cobbled and haven't changed in decades, you know, and it's like legends of the sport have all raced up there. You can see the photos of back in the day, and you can do the exact same roads. And it's pretty special, I think.
How much does the gearing on a pro bike make a difference to climbing there? I'd imagine if you, on a, like our producer's got a Brompton,
I think you're going to take on some of these on a Brompton. It? Oh, it still wouldn't be a great idea. That would sort the men out from the boys, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah, I wouldn't like to do it on a Brompton, to be fair. But quite a few of them, like the Motirolo, for instance, is one of the climbs in the book. It's in Italy, and it's just brutal. It's super steep, and it's over 10K long, you know, over 5 miles. And it's like over like 10% average as well, which I'm not sure what that is in British money, but it's steep. And so sometimes we adjust our gear in, like, we have our standard gears, but then sometimes for those super hard days, we have a lower gear on the front and a bigger on the back, which just basically, you call it granny gear. No offense to grannies out there, but it's just a lot smaller than usual.
And the way, the way you have to adapt your diet for certain climbs, for certain ascents, is interesting as well at the top level. I'm sure the punters won't be doing that, but you guys at the top do.
Yeah, like it's a big difference for myself. You know, when I started my career on the track, you know, riding Team Pursuit at the Olympics and things, and to go from that to the Tour de France is a big change physically, really. You know, the demands are totally different. It's all on a bike, obviously, but it's just a totally different game. And power to weight is key when it comes to racing up these big mountains.
A lot of these climbs must be incredibly scenic. How much of that can you take in? Well, obviously, from your point, when you're in a race, it'd be harder. But I suppose for the average punter, that would be a part of the attraction.
Most definitely. Like you say, in a race, we don't get a chance at all, really. Kind of looking at the wheel in front, or, you know, if you happen to be on the front, then you just sort of concentrating on what you're doing. But, you know, when it comes to when you do recons before the race, or just a standard training ride, then yeah, I think that's another lucky thing we get to do. You know, we travel the world and we see some amazing places, and yeah, obviously when you're racing you don't really see that, but every other time you get to take it in. And yeah, like these climbs, some of them are super high. I think Stelvio, which is in the book as well, that's maybe 2,700 meters high, which I'm not sure what that is in feet either, to be honest. But it's high, basically, you know. And the air is thin on top, and there's some stunning views. You know, I think Top Gear's been up there a fair few times. It's a great road for driving. A lot easier to drive than ride a bike. But I think we're just fortunate we get to race in such spectacular scenery.
Yeah. You've covered a lot of mountains all around the world, in Australia and France and Belgium, Tenerife, etc. But if there was only one you could choose, I mean, it may be that you choose it simply because it's the feeling of conquering it, probably not the thought of having to ride up it. But is there one standout one for you?
I think it's a bit of an obvious one, really, but Alpe d'Huez is... It's so iconic. It's probably the most iconic climb in the Tour de France. And I won up there in 2018 when I won the Tour. And it's just beyond my wildest dreams, really, to be racing up there in the yellow jersey for a start, and then to actually win up there, which, I never really see myself as a climber, or I don't see myself as a climber. And to have won up there is just like insane, really, when I think about it. And, you know, it's got 21 hairpins, and a couple of hairpins have their own sort of nationality almost. So there's a Dutch corner, which is just like unbelievable. The atmosphere there, that the, you know, they're up there for a couple of days before, all drinking, all leery, and it's just like the atmosphere is insane. And there's a Welsh corner as well now, Irish corner. And it's just like yeah, that climb is just like in the Tour, it's just unbelievable. Like the different, the colours, the noise, you know, the smells and everything. And yeah, to be racing up there, which, like I say, you know, they've been doing what since, I don't know when it was first in the Tour, but it must have been around like the 50s or 60s. And so, yeah, to be a part of that history as well is really special.
Now, you admitted earlier this week that you weren't able to watch any more of the Giro after your fall, but you were still chuffed for your teammate Theo Gegenhardt. It is some performance, isn't it, by him?
Yeah, unbelievable. You know, I think we were both together in the first races back after, you know, the whole lockdown, and he was hoping to ride the Tour, didn't make the team there. Then he obviously went to the Giro to ride for me and help me try to win it. And then suddenly, you know, I was home within 3 days and he had the chance to just go for it himself and, you know, no pressure. And then suddenly the last few days, he's right up there in the mix and, yeah, ended up winning it. And it's just incredible. And I think he'll do his confidence. The world are good now going forward.
Where does it leave? Do you wonder it leaves the pecking order, really? I mean, you've got so many guys that can go out and win big races. And you've got a lot of good young guys coming through as well. You're in pretty good shape as a team, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. It's the talent we got is unbelievable, really. And we made some really good signings as well. We've got maybe three signings that are all sort of capable of winning big races in their own right as well. But for me, that's kind of like the norm almost, you know, growing up, you know, in the British cycling system, the competition for places was always high. And I think that's one thing that really helps me continue to like strive to be my best. You know, if you're not pushed from beneath and from the side and from the top, then, you know, you kind of get a bit complacent maybe, but, you know, there's no room for that in the team now. And we're all pushing each other and all, you know, striving to be better. And I think that's what makes us, you know, one of the best teams in the world.
He's a fellow gooner as well. He'll be hoping to get the treatment like you did out on the pitch. But of course, you're going to have to wait for the crowds to come back. There's not much point in doing it at the moment.
Yeah, I've been winding him up about that, saying he's not going to get a chance to do it, unfortunately. But I'm sure he will next year or whenever, yeah.
Yeah. And just final one on you. When do you hope to... I mean, next year, Olympics, of course, and the Tour, you've still got all those ambitions. When will you get back on a bike, you think?
Probably a couple of weeks' time. Like I said, it's off season now, so there's no massive rush to get back on. And it'll just be steady training for a while anyway. But yeah, the Olympics is still a massive goal. The Tour as well, but also the Giro now. You know, it's the second time that I've had a freak accident there and crashed out. So that's also sort of a bit, you know, on my radar. So we'll see what the other guys are up to and we'll go from there.
Nice one. Best of luck with the book, Grant. Good to talk to you.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Let's take you back to 1977 now.
That's it. That's a half volley through mid-arm for four. The back goes in the air. The England players come out to applaud what really has got to be a moment here of cricket history. Jeffrey Boycott, 100 hundreds and the place to get it.
in the middle of a test match against Australia on his home ground at Headingley.
Fantastic. And he's doing his Jim Laker impressions now. It's fantastic to hear that again, wasn't it?
Of course it was.
And the bat that scored those runs is up for sale, believe it or not. It's a Sir Geoffrey Boycott collection on sale until the 16th of November at Christie's. And that's the high end. But there is stuff, I think, if you want a little bit of sporting memorabilia, a bit of sporting history, some of the items on sale, very accessible. And here to tell us more about them is the man himself, Sir Geoffrey Boycott. Geoffrey, good afternoon.
Hello, lads. A long time.
Yeah, you're lovely to talk to you again. Always a pleasure. I suppose the first question, Geoffrey, is why? I mean, why have you decided to sell this all off?
Well, I lived in Wakefield, Woolley, and boxed everything up and went to live in Jersey. Beautiful place. Loved it every minute. 7, 8 years. I think 8 years I was there. Then we came back here to Boston Spa. I think I lived here. I'm into my 8th year. And they're still in boxes. And I've never seen them for like 15 years. And with this coronavirus, or this COVID-19, and everybody's stuck at home, you know what you do. My wife said to me, I've got to go upstairs and open them up and see what's going on and what's up there. And there's all sorts of blazers, bats, stumps, silverware, all sorts of things, shirts. And what the hell are we going to do with them? Nobody sees them. They're boxed up in cardboard boxes or in suitcases. And, by law of averages, I should die before Rachel. I'm 12 years older. And she won't stay here in Yorkshire, as much as I love it, because we've got a daughter who got married and lives in Cheshire. There's a grandchild there, Joshua, who's one. Mm. They'll probably have another one next year. She wants to be over there seeing them, the daughter, the grandchildren. She helps out with the shop. My daughter's got a wedding dress shop, beautiful shop, 3 tiers in, you know, called Maria Modes, and it's gorgeous. And she helps out with that, doing the windows and everything. It's a girl thing, isn't it? Wedding dresses. And she says, well, we're not going to keep them. I says, well, why not? She said, well, when you die, we're going to sell them. I said, you can't. I said, we can do what we want. I mean, what can you say? I mean, she says, look, I want 2 or 3 things about you, but we're not having you all over the house with all your stuff. I mean, I've got that many blazers, bats, stumps, all sorts. You could fill a huge room with the stuff.
Mm.
And I mean, yes, I love it. And some of it's magic memories and everything. What the hell am I going to do with it? I mean, if I had a big room,
yeah,
I suppose to be facetious and silly, I could get a big room here. I have this big house, about 38 rooms, stunning place it is, Boston Hall. I mean, maybe I should put them all in a big house. I suggested that to the wife. We should charge people £5 in the summer to come in, and you could serve cream teas and sandwiches outside in the garden. No way. That's not going to happen. I'm just teasing her. But I said, what the hell do you do with it? I mean, you get presidents in America. I mean, they're huge. I mean, President of America, all their papers go into some, and you can go and look at them, so, all kinds of people are studying. But listen, I'm just a bloody cricketer, aren't I? That's all I was. I gave some pleasure at times, but I was a cricketer.
And it is nice, Geoffrey, that people will get to it. I mean, I know that you could have set up a room and
a boycott
museum would have been nice, but this is nice
I'm
in
not
some
that
ways.
That cricket, name. I'm yeah. Look, I was a fine player, but I mean, there's some better than me. You can't set up one for a cricketer. I mean, it's just
some of the sort of elite, and Paul's right, there's items from £100 right upwards, but some of the elite items, like the bat for the 100th test, etc., you know, that will go for, I'm surprised that at least one wouldn't be in the Lord's Museum. I would have thought it would be, you know, well worthy of being
there. Well,
they
might be snapping one up, I would imagine.
Well, my Gillette Cup bat was in there. Mm. That's up for sale. I mean, look, a friend of ours put us in touch with Christie's. They know them, and they came round, and I said, look, is it worth putting up? What do we do with them? They had a look round. I let them pick what they want. There are a few items left, but I let them pick whatever they thought. I mean, look, there's an original scorebook from Acworth Cricket Club. I think I was at 11, my first match for Acworth's second team. I think I scored 9, didn't I? and I mean, that's not going to go for fortunes. It's just, look, if people who love cricket and some who liked my batting and everything, they'd like to purchase them, maybe they could enjoy them, look at them, admire them. Because stuck in a, you know, in a suitcase, in, you know, brown paper boxes, packed up, you know, I mean, nobody sees them, nobody enjoys them. And the wife and daughter, look, as much as they love me, but they're not going to have them round the house forever.
Yeah.
I asked the daughter what she wanted to do with them. She said, yeah, one or two pieces, but she doesn't want them all. I mean, I can understand that. You don't want your house full of your father like a mausoleum, do you?
No, of course not.
I mean, it's some great stuff, though.
So I listened to him and I said, right, I thought it might happen next year, but Christie's came along and they said, look, with the lockdown and the virus and everybody's stuck at home and everybody's on, you know, internet and computers, it's just as well to do it now. So, look, you just listen to people who know more than you. You want to know about cricket, listen to me. Anything else, I'm not very good at.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
It's interesting to see that La Liga president, Javier Tebas, talking about the Barcelona chairman leaving, you know, the president leaving, and saying that, basically, he says that it was very nice of him to announce on the last day participation in a phantom league that will be the ruin of Barcelona. So, interesting. Not didn't go down too well in Spain there, so not surprising, I suppose.
No, understandably.
Mick May wrote to The Sun today about Lewis Hamilton. It's amazing, this, isn't it? David Beckham seemed to think he's entitled to a knighthood. Now there's talk of one for Lewis Hamilton. Isn't the money enough? You think, well, come on, he's the best of all time. He's one of Britain's finest ever sports people. Why would he not think eventually he'd get a knighthood? He will, won't he?
Yeah, I would like to think so.
Definitely. I noticed this with Gucci. This is a thing that they do all the time. They basically bring out things like, I first saw this in Edinburgh for myself. They had a tracksuit for about 1,500 quid. I was thinking, that's ridiculous. Who'd wear a tracksuit for this money? But it's what they do. They do like a lunchbox for 800 quid. Today they're doing ripped tights for £146. And you think,
ripped tights?
Ripped tights. Basically, tight, as if you've basically laddered your tights.
Wow.
And that's it. That's the look. But, you know, if you're mad enough to pay that.
That's an acquired taste, I would think.
That's up to you, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I suppose, definitely. Entirely sure. Do you think that I'm a Celebrity is going to work this year? I can't see it. It seems like so grim in that sort of Welsh castle at this time of the year.
Is it all going to be based in a castle? So it won't be the normal set. It just happens to be in Wake. Can't be, because it'd be freezing, wouldn't it? It could be snowing. So,
yeah, I know. That's terrible, really. And more you read about Karim Benzema's comments about Vinicius, you realise it's worse when you realise that Vinicius doesn't speak French. Mm. That's that worst thing. You're speaking about somebody basically in front of them in a different language. You know they don't understand you. So I suppose he thought he'd get away with it, but, you know, not great for teamwork, is it?
It was a bit. Did you realise that Wimbledon are going back to Plough Lane next week?
Next week?
Yeah.
No. Is it finished? Is the stadium finished?
Yeah.
Oh, I should know this, because my friend that helped Brentford or was working for Brentford actually now is working for Wimbledon. So, the stadium must be nearly ready.
Yeah, that's right. So they go back. They've been, say, lodging at QPR since the start of the season. They return next week to their old home at Plough Lane after 29 years. So certainly we'll be having a chat about that with a couple of Wimbledon legends.
And we'll speak to Todd about this. Did you see this? This is about the bloke that broke the protocols in the World Series, Justin Turner. He got removed during the eighth innings because it turned out he'd failed a COVID test. But you sort of kind of feel for him, because he went and celebrated with the rest of the players when they won. But it's a moral dilemma, that, because you think, for a player, how many World Series are you going to win in your career?
Yeah.
You know, not to be able to celebrate that moment. You can see the problem.
The thing is, he came out without any kind of face covering.
No, it's a disaster.
And when they told him to put one on, he wouldn't.
No. Well, he's going to be in trouble now.
Yeah, it wouldn't have played well. They think it could. A lot of the families were down there, and obviously the players have been mixing with him.
No,
so
it's not ideal.
They're worried it was a bit of a super spreader event. But Hawksby and Jacobs here on Talk Sport. And sad news earlier on today that a previous guest here in the studio, and a couple of times they came in and saw us over the years, that
that Bobby Board died after contracting the virus. Really sad news. There was a lot of love for him. We were only speaking to him a little while ago with the writer and comedian Joe Wilkinson, who made the Copfield series, which he was in.
He had a wonderful late acting career. Yeah. He was in Not Going
Not
Out.
Lee Mack has talked to us about just how fantastic he is, what a fine actor he was, and a brilliant job he did. So it was really, really sad news. I think so many of the listeners kind of grew up watching Cannon and Ball. So we went to the archive and we decided to play you a few moments from an interview we did back in March 2009 with Bobby and Tommy. And we talked to them about their life and career and their love of sport.
Laugh me a laugh, grin me a grin.
Tommy's just been joining in.
Fantastic.
What a song.
Cannon and Ball with us in the studio. Good afternoon, fellas.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you, lads?
Lovely to see you. Thanks ever so much for coming in.
I think I said this before we go any further. We're very big fans, me and Tom, because we listen to it all the time, TalkSport.
Oh,
do I? Good all to hear. The time. It's fantastic. Well, we're driving.
Would you like to say that clearly? More clearly?
I have said it very clearly, actually.
Because I read an article, an interview with you a couple of years back, and I mean, you're still working like mad, still doing very, very well.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, we have to do it.
It's never gone away, is it?
Tommy keeps having kids.
Now, it's interesting because a lot of turns, especially comedians, they say we use never off, and he's a classic example. But a lot of them are very different, aren't they? A lot of people you work with. When I worked with Frankie Howard years ago, and he was quite a different man off than he was on.
Totally different. Some aren't, you know.
Yeah.
Tommy's like that when he's off stage. He's very miserable. It's a miserable thing.
So who do you support then, fellas?
To be honest with you, we haven't got a team that we really support. I were born and bred in Oldham, so I used to be an Oldham Athletic.
Mind you, was on the board, weren't you, at Rochdale?
I was on the board for my sins at Rochdale Football Club.
He was on the board at Rochdale Football Club, and I was on the board at the Hornets.
Okay.
Oh, really? I
became chairman. For my sins, I don't know.
And
what
a funny story about that. A funny story. I was brought up rugby league. My father, big rugby league. My mother, rugby league. Mm. And all his and a flat cap man smoked a pipe, and he said, "That rugby union." Never watched that, lad. I said, "Why that?" Then he said, "They get the ball. Anybody runs at them, they throw it away." I walked in the house, and he was about 79, and he's got rugby union on the television. Mm. And I said, "What are you doing, Dad? Watching that?" He said, "You know, it's not a bad game when you get into it."
Can we have a proper rock on Tommy from you, Bobby?
So. Okay, rock on Tommy.
There we go.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
We all have a sports documentary, especially a football one, and there is a new kid on the block. It's called The Three Kings, and it's been directed by someone you'll know well from TalkSport every Sunday, Johnny Owen. Before we chat to Johnny, we will play you a little bit of the trailer of the film.
Somebody said the football's a matter of life and death to you. I said, listen, it's more important than that.
I used to work in the pit as a boy of 14.
Brought up in a faith which was football.
I wanted to be a manager. I was hell-bent on that.
Steen, Shankly and Busby went straight in to harness the power of the community.
We had a poor team. I came here because of the people.
I like to be manager of Celtic. I like the people who support us.
He made you believe you were something special.
So there we are, a bit of a flavour of Three Kings, of course, about Messrs Busby, Steen and Shankly. And Johnny joins us now. Good afternoon, Johnny.
Good afternoon, lads. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're good. Thank you. Yeah, it's fascinating story, isn't it? I mean, it's incredible that these guys, all born within 30 miles of each other, all went on to be absolute legends of the game.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary thing, isn't it? I mean, like you're saying, the effect they had on the three cities, the clubs, and the modern game, really, as we know it. And the film is about that, really. And the film is about the fact that it's no coincidence that they came from that part of the world. Scotland was football mad, still is. Record crowds are often broken in Scotland. They had the spine of many great English teams right through the 20th century, as we know. And they turned out to be great managers. And they were also miners, and that interested me. And it's a profession that's gone now, but they were rooted in community and working together. You know, they could argue a point. They were all sort of union men, all the attributes you need, really, for great management in any industry, and especially football. So I just thought it was a film that was worth making, really, because in the modern age, sometimes we can not forget, but it's good to sort of remember where sort of clubs are rooted.
This came from a book, didn't it, that you co-wrote with Leo Moynihan, and was it difficult to turn a book into a film, if you know what I mean?
Well, the film, it was before the book.
The film was before the book?
Yeah. So I've been so long making it, lads.
Oh, right. Blimey. So that's interesting, because the book was out a few years ago, wasn't it?
Last year it came out. I started the film almost 2.5 years ago. To be honest with you, there was the chaps that made Senna and Amy, the producer, James, he got in touch with me because I'd done a film called I Believe in Miracles about Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, sure.
And he really enjoyed it. And he asked me, would I be interested in doing something with them? And my father, bless him, passed away in 2017. My dad had worked underground, as had most people's parents of my generation. It was nothing unusual. But he always pointed out to people who've worked underground as well. So whenever Shankly or somebody come on TV, they always go, they were a miner. And I just had this idea of that generation of men and women are leaving us, really. And I just thought to myself, it'd be good to document, you know, their story, really, you know, because he was part of that. Of that men who worked, you know, in the heavy industry and the way it affected football and how, you know, football is rooted in working class life. You know, they worked hard 6 days a week until midday on a Saturday and then went and played football on a Sunday. So I just thought it's a story sort of that's very, you know, relevant as to the modern age as the game becomes richer and we end up paying money just to watch a single match. Mm. We can also talk about the men who played for the love of the game, really.
When you want to tell a story like this, Johnny, I mean, we saw you mentioned that some of the work that James has done, and that included Diego Maradona. And the core of that was some footage that they knew of that they were able to build the film around. But so is there a kind of critical mass of footage that, you know, good archive that is already out there that you think this is how I can tell my story? Or you say this is the story I want to tell and I'll now go and find that archive and just hope it's there to tell that story, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. It was more the second thing, really. I kind of tried to piece together the story. I had their voices. They did quite a lot of radio interviews and things, and I managed to find a lot of them. James comes from this way of documentary filmmaking where he kind of narrates the voice and then puts the footage on after, if you know what I mean. And that's the way we approached this. So I kind of went off, and I had a fantastic archivist who went out, and apparently, this is my fault, when I put it all together, there was 50 different sources of archive.
Wow.
And you know, it took a lot of finding, but we did it and we put it together. And the biggest problem I had was trying to get the story within that sort of hour and a half, hour and three quarters, because they lived three such rich lives. They were players as well as managers, you know, so it was trying to find the time and work the three stories in together.
Hugh McIlvenny did a documentary, didn't he, on these three, and of course, but he had a kind of unique style. Did you look at that beforehand?
I very much did. Yeah, I was very inspired by that, even as a boy when I seen it. Obviously, it's amazing how time flies, but that was 25 years ago now.
Wow.
So I just thought to myself, I know, it's just extraordinary, isn't it? So I just thought to myself, I'd like to tell that story in a modern way. And that was James's big note to me all the way through this. He kept saying to me, I need you to make this so an 18-year-old can watch this and fall in love with the three men. And I was like, sort of like, okay, so it was quite not a difficult thing to do, but I was very aware that I had to keep you've got to keep a more modern audience with these three men. I mean, the Babes footage is nearly 70 years old now. So, you know, Duncan Edwards, for argument's sake, if you look at his old footage, it's black and white footage. But if you can add sound to that and music and cut it in a very modern way, suddenly Duncan Edwards looks like the player who would be a magnificent player even now, because you can present him in a very modern context, you know, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted somebody really young to look at the Babes, for argument's sake, and go, wow, what a football team they were.
Well, I mean, they were rivals in football, certainly in the case of Busby and Shankly, but they were great friends. They had a lot of respect for each other, didn't they? But apparently there's not a great deal of footage out there of all three of them together.
There's not, no. They were very close, actually. I mean, I've spoke to people like Paddy Barkley and the great Archie McPherson, and they spent so much time together, which I didn't realise. Basically, like Shankly would pop over to Manchester, and Jock Steiner, famously, because of the way he drove, could make Glasgow to Anfield in 3 hours flat and have a parking space waited for him. But they did spend a lot of time together talking and discussing football. Bill Shankly's granddaughter, Karen, says, you know, she just remembers afternoons with her grandfather on the phone, and it was always to Matt. You know, so there's this amazing rivalry that built up between Manchester United and Liverpool, probably one of the most keen rivalries in world sport now. But it began in the mid-60s, and I've always thought people talk about ship canals and music, but actually it began with these two men before the mid-60s when they started swapping titles and cups like two boxers. There wasn't that rivalry there, the keenness of that rivalry. It really began with them, and then it carried on and built really through the decades. So I just wanted to sort of let people know where the roots of the great, you know, Manchester-Liverpool, Manchester United-Liverpool rivalry was.
And finally, for the film having a relevance today, you've got a moment where Jock Stein says, football without crowds is nothing. It's quite interesting, isn't it, in light of what we're going through at the moment.
He wasn't wrong, was he?
No.
No, it's a remarkable thing the way that's happened, because obviously, you know, that footage, I was putting it together, you know, 18 months, a year ago, and now it has more relevance than ever. And the irony is, of course, is that, you know, it's gone out to cinemas, and it was released last week to cinemas across the UK. With COVID, we're struggling a little bit with the amount of screens we can get it to, but at least it's going to cinemas. And the website crashed that morning, the cinema website, and they'd never known anything like it. And all the cinemas in Scotland and Glasgow sold out.
Wow.
And they were a bit like, and I was like, well, that's football fans. It's almost difficult somebody to describe to people from the arts world, where I come from, the media world. They go, well, you know, and I'm like, that's this world, you know. These people are fanatical about their team, you know, and that's been going on for 150 years. And it was lovely to see that, you know, where they were coming back to me going, well, this cinema sold out in Glasgow. And that one, I was going, well, of course it's going to sell out. This is Celtic. This is Jock Stein. You know, he's a religion up there, literally.
Is it available on Sky and elsewhere? Are you as well at the moment?
Because your other film, I Believe in Miracles, is on BT Films, isn't it? Because I was going through them last night looking something to watch.
It is. That was, yeah. So basically, it goes to cinemas now for a few weeks. Then it goes to DVD for Christmas. And then it goes, I believe Amazon have bought it, like they've bought up the rest of the world. And
nice so they've one. Bought That's it up
as well. That's all right. You know, you can watch it. But yeah, so it'll be widely available for people to see, but I'm really pleased that we managed to get it on a big screen at least for a few weeks and at a difficult time, so hopefully people can go out and watch it and enjoy it that way as well.
And you're back on Sunday on TalkSport, yeah?
I'm back on Sunday, boys. Looking forward to 2 hours with Mark Webster. And I just want to say as well, I just really enjoyed that piece you did about Bobby Ball. It was beautifully done.
Yeah.
Really sweet.
He was a lovely guy. It sort of shocked everybody today, especially, I mean, however someone passes is terrible, but to think it was the virus, you know.
Exactly.
Terrible.
But it was a really nice touch to go back into archive and that. It was a beautiful thing to do.
Cheers, Johnny. Lovely to talk to you. All the best.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. Thanks so much for listening. Tomorrow, Ebony Rainford-Brent pops in to see us. We'll talk a bit of cricket with her. We've got, obviously, the Clips of the Week, Martin Kellner, Tom Macklin, a lot more besides. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.